This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 253.
There are great neighborhood shopping centers in low-income areas. There are great neighborhood shopping centers in middle-income areas or in high-income areas. So it doesn't really matter the income level because there are tenants to serve that neighborhood.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner. What's going on, man?
So here's a funny story. So last week here on the podcast, you made the end of it, you made fun of something. You said there was a white sticker on my shirt.
I did.
And I looked over and I had no idea what it was. And I sat there looking at it, trying to figure out. You don't have one. Don't worry. I go in the house and my wife says, Brandon, your shirt's on inside out. So apparently what the sticker was on like the inside of a shirt. I don't know, like... Anyway, apparently for the entire podcast, if you go back and look at the YouTube version, people, my shirt was on inside out. That's life with a 16-month-old baby, apparently.
I'll just stop there.
Anyway, so how you doing? What's new?
Oh man, I'm good. You know, things are going well. I'm pumped. Like, you know, it's not every show because we've done the show 250 something times. So, you know, there is some repetition from time to time, at least in terms of ideas and strategies. Yeah. There's always something new, but
today is all new.
But today, man. Yeah, totally new. Great.
Yeah.
Great show. Some cool ideas. I mean, a guy who's got a fantastic strategy, scaled a monster business.
Yeah.
And, just wicked smart.
But we have to put like a disclaimer or warning at the front of the show. Like this is one, you know, at the end of the show, you're going to be like, oh, I got to do that. I'm going to go do that. So like, this is going to blow your mind. You guys are going to love this. So warning, you're going to love this. So
warning, shiny object syndrome.
Yeah.
You might want to change your real estate strategy after hearing this.
Yeah.
Which is
it's true.
It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's good, but obviously, you know, the key to success in anything, in particular real estate, is figure it out and do it and don't let all the shiny objects kind of get in your way.
Yeah. So this might become my new thing after mobile home parks. I got to try that first. But
yeah, there you go. Awesome.
All right.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling that I locked my back door. How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short Notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP.
Now, I think normally we do our little song and dance before the sponsor.
Quick tip.
Yeah, we got to do it now. So it's our, you jumped the gun. Quick tip.
Quick tip.
All right.
Oh, did I ruin you?
You your totally whole thing? Wrecked it.
Oh, well.
Way to go, Wreck-It Ralph. All right. Today's whatever. Quick tip is something we've talked about a lot before, but not everybody takes advantage of it. And we have a really, really awesome marketplace on Bigger Pockets that is used for both deals and for other opportunities. So
product services.
Yeah, product services, whatever. Jump in there, check it out. It doesn't take a, I mean, everybody on Bigger Pockets, free or paid, can go in and surf around the marketplace, see what's in there, see if there's something that works for you. Make sure you set up some keyword alerts for like your city name so you get notified of marketplace deals in your area. But anyway, go ahead and check it out. Anybody can do it. And if you are a pro member, you can jump in there and actually make a listing. So if you're a pro member, I want to encourage you guys, before today is over, go make a listing for something that you need, some kind of property you're looking for or
haves, wants, yeah, things have, like yeah. that.
So jump in there, make a listing. There you go.
And one more thing, if you are a licensed real estate agent, you can post your listings for free on the platform.
Yeah,
so yeah, get out there and make it happen. It's a great place to get exposure. So cool, man. Well, this is show 235 of the Bigger Pockets podcast.
Nope, and, it's not. That's not even close to being correct.
253. Holy. Oh my God. Total dyslexia.
Wow. That was really good. You're getting really old. Ed.
Wow. This is show 253 of the Bigger Pockets podcast. Wow. And you can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show253. That's 253. Be sure to check that out. Let's get into this, man. Today's guest is a guy I've known for a number of years. Our kids go to school together, and I've been fascinated by his business model, and I'm excited to have him on the show. All right, let's bring him in. All right, David, welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you here.
It's nice to be here.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of weird because normally on these podcasts, like I know the guests ahead of time a lot of times because like, I don't know, I travel more than Josh does. And so I meet people, I invite them on the show, but this is weird. You guys are like BFFs and I don't know what's going on. So how
are
do you,
lost?
How do
you,
I am,
how
it's
you
weird.
An interview like this, man, yeah, I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I know. I have no idea what I'm doing, which is actually most of life. So how do you guys know each other, Dave? How do you know Josh?
We have children that go to school together. So I see Josh every morning at the drop off.
Ah, yes. Nice.
In our underwear.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. I don't know. This got weird. This got really weird.
Yeah, it's a special school.
Yeah. But I'm assuming besides being part of the dad's underwear club, you are also somehow involved in the real estate business. Is that correct?
That's right, Brandon. I am. Yeah.
All right. So why don't we?
He's got a good voice for radio. I just realized that. I mean,
he does
quite a face for it too.
Yeah, that's great.
Face for it. All right. So let's go to your story. Let's go way back in the day. How did you get started with this whole idea of real estate?
Yep. Sure. So I came to Denver about 35 years ago, and went to University of Denver for undergraduate and law school. And when I graduated from law school, I worked for a law firm for a few years and then went to work for a private real estate developer. So I kind of left the practice of law and then worked for a guy who bought a bunch of buildings, actually after selling a high-tech business. So he had a bunch of cash in his pocket and he bought 8 buildings and I went to work for him. And my career in real estate went from there.
Okay. So let's talk about your very first deal, like that you did, you know, not for him, but like for yourself. Like, how did you get into it?
Yeah, no. So I ended up leaving his firm and starting a third-party property management company. So we manage retail, industrial, office buildings for other people. And one of our clients sold his building. He had $1 million and he wanted to buy another building. So my partner and I chipped in the sweat and he chipped in his $1 million and we bought a building together and we ended up running it for him. And it was a successful investment for us and for him and venture for us. So we got going with a client who's actually still with us today.
All right. So this guy, he's got $1 million he needs to spend. He needs somebody who's going to put the time and energy in.
Right.
You and your buddy, your partner provided that for him. So what did you do? You managed the building. Did you identify it or had he already found the building?
No, yeah, we identified it. And then because we were both former practicing lawyers, so we ended up putting the transaction together for him. And kind of a funny part of the story, which is a good lesson for us, is that we bought the building and the next day there was a moving truck in front of the building. And one of the 25 tenants was moving out the day after we bought the property unannounced. So, they basically left in the middle of the night and we had to go from there. We had to backfill that space and do a little bit more work than we thought, but ended up working out okay.
School of hard knocks.
Yes. Yep.
So
you can never do enough due diligence is the lesson there.
Nice. Was that residential then? I'm assuming they're
talking about. No, like, it was an office building.
Oh, okay.
It was a multi-tenant office building.
Okay. Now most people don't get into real estate that I know that we've interviewed anyway. They don't jump into all of a sudden commercial real estate. They jump in, they buy a house and then a duplex. And like, why did you skip that whole phase and just jump into the big boy club?
Yeah, well, it was pretty much because of my background, practicing law. I worked for banks and real estate companies, developers, and pretty much all commercial, though. So I had that transactional commercial background going into it and really never thought about residential because of that background.
Okay. Got it. So what did that look like? You know, the $1 million office, it was $1 million office building, yeah?
No, yeah, it was actually three. So his $1 million was the equity.
That was equity. Okay.
That's perfect. Right. And we found a $2 million loan to buy it. So we pretty much put the whole transaction together for him. And, and that's so the sweat that we put into the deal was all of the related functions putting together that transaction and then running the building.
Yeah. What I love about this, I want to pull something out here. Like, people often say you can't do deals without any money. Like you have to put money into it and no money down is a scam or whatever. But this is a good example where like you didn't take necessarily your cash. Somebody else brought the cash for the down payment.
Correct.
And you brought your unfair advantage, which we talk about all the time here. You had something that you were good at and that was managing properties and being a lawyer. And so you brought that to the table and that was that took the place of your cash.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I mean, whether or not people buy that. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I would argue that most people, when they're getting going, start with no money whatsoever and use that unfair advantage to be able to, or bring in an investor. So it's, a lot of it has to do with using other people's money to start a career and to build off of that career.
Yeah. And the way that you did that, I mean, I've structured numerous deals that exact same way. I mean, on a much smaller scale with like, you know, duplexes, triplexes, but I'll find a partner who will bring in the down payment. They don't have to have all the money. They don't have to be super rich, but they'll bring the down payment and then we'll get a loan and they'll have the ability to get a loan. So when I was struggling, I had no job and no credit, no whatever. I wanted to buy a triplex. So I just found a couple. They didn't even have any money. They had a line of credit though on their house. So they used the line of credit. We split everything 50-50 at the end, but I was no money into the deal. And so that strategy works no matter what level you're at.
Well, the other thing that we've done, and it kind of goes along these lines, is that we've had partners come in who have been basically guarantors on loans. So we didn't have the balance sheet early on to be able to finance a property. So we brought in a partner who had the balance sheet. They didn't put in any cash, but they guaranteed the loan, which got the deal off the ground and they got a piece of the profits basically, as we managed and then sold the property.
Oh man, I want to dig it. I really want to dig in on this because like yesterday I had a conversation with a commercial lender and this came up as like, I don't know if I could personally, like I'm trying to, get qualified, I'm trying to buy a large property. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I have the net worth to be able to justify a large loan. And so yesterday I was like, oh no, I don't know what to do. And now you brought this up. So you, that I didn't even know that was a thing. You can bring in somebody as a guarantor, is that the word?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And give a piece. Like, how does that, I mean, like, what kind of piece do you give a person for doing that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be a negotiated transaction.
Ranges.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we did that twice kind of early on, and the guarantor partner received a third of our share of the deal. So, you know, and in our properties or in our business, how we work is that we'll bring in investors, we'll have what's called a promote, which is if we hit certain hurdles of return for the investor, then we see a share of the profits after you sell a property. So these guarantee partners ended up sharing in our share of the profits once we sold the building.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And they didn't have anything to do really except for to put up their balance sheet, and it ended up working out to everyone's benefit at the end of the day after we sold the real estate.
Yeah. What's the risk to them for putting up their balance sheet?
That the property goes under in foreclosure and then the bank goes after them. So
they're actually on the hook for it.
Yeah, they're on the hook for it. That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So yeah. So what I need to do then is if I'm going to go get a $4 or $5 million loan on a property, I need to find okay. I love that. I love these podcasts, Josh.
Talk out loud.
This is so good.
Through, man.
This is awesome. Because like seriously, yesterday I got to this point where I was like, I don't know how to solve this problem. Because I don't have the net worth to justify a $4 or $5 million loan, but I'm considering some properties that are that size. And so what do I do? And you know, that makes perfect sense. I just never thought about it that way. So thank you. This whole thing has been worth it. We can go home now. This is great.
There you go. Great. Nice.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, let's go to the end of your story real quick. I mean, like overall, what have you done? Like, what's your thing today? Like units, numbers or anything like that. What can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So now over almost 20 years, we've built a portfolio of over 50 properties, and we own exclusively now neighborhood shopping centers. So if you can envision a 100,000 square foot multi-tenant neighborhood everyday goods and service shopping center that's well located on a good street, good corner, whatever, that's the type of property that we own. Wow. So over these years, we started out, we did some industrial, some office, all commercial all the time. Now we've just gravitated solely into the space of owning neighborhood shopping centers.
Yeah. And why is that? Why did you guys decide that that's going to be the model?
Well, we've developed it over time. So I'll go back to our second deal that we ever did. And it actually started with a tragedy that's kind of poignant for today in America. But we bought a shopping center that was the site of a shooting. And in Denver, it's kind of a famous shooting. It's called the Chuck E. Cheese Massacre. A guy went in and gunned down 8 of his fellow employees.
Oh,
so, yeah. And it's just a brutal story at a Chuck E. Cheese, obviously. So about 3 years later, we bought the property out of foreclosure, basically from an insurance company that didn't even know that they owned it. I mean, it was a total disaster for them. So we bought it, but it was really well located on an intersection in Aurora, Colorado. So we bought the property. It was in pretty bad shape. The Chuck E. Cheese was still vacant and a disaster, but we had a couple of good tenants in there that we could build off of. So we ended up turning the shopping center around and doing really well financially. We put in a Chipotle, and there was the kind of the beginning of a Whole Foods. We had a coffee shop, ice cream shop. We had a Super Salad. So we had really good tenants in it by the time we ended up selling the property. So what it really taught us was if we bought really well-located neighborhood shopping centers with everyday goods and services in it, they could actually survive even a terrible thing like a shooting. And then as we went along through the recession of 2008, 2009, we saw that our tenant base was really resilient to recession. So the examples that I use are you still get your haircut, you know, in good times or bad, you're going to buy a 6-pack of beer in good times or bad, you're going to go to the subway in good times or bad, get your nails done, go to the health club, whatever it is, all that everyday goods and service. So we found over the past 20 years after that kind of inauspicious beginning was that, you know, these shopping centers are really, really resilient. And we still see that today.
So you've kind of found this Amazon proof model.
Correct.
Where, you know, it's not necessarily retail that could be taken out by these online guys. It's stuff that you have to have a neighborhood. Like, I'm not going to let my wife cut my hair. I'm going to the barbershop, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And Josh, you'll like this, but we have a new tenant in one of our buildings. It's a pickle shop. Oh. And I swear they sell pickles, and you know, it's hard to buy pickles on there. It's a great concept. It's in a shopping center that we have in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
David, have you ever been out to eat with Josh?
This is why he brings up the whole thing. This is a great pickle incident of October 2017, because there was probably a great pickle incident in September and August and July.
I was going to say, like, I've been out to eat with Josh numerous times where he says no pickle, and a pickle comes, and you should see the belittling he gives the waitress.
I do not belittle anyone.
It's like, are you the most stupid person? Okay, it's not that bad, but you see, he is a.
Well, it's close though. I've seen it. Yeah, it's close.
Hey, listen, we were at a nice restaurant, Dave and I. I was very clear about no pickles. And they had they put the pickle on and then they took it off, which is like the worst.
Yeah. Side.
Yeah, it didn't go well for them.
Did you belittle the lady?
So Josh is not going to go to our pickle shop. I can
guarantee
that. Dave
did get a free meal out of it.
I did. Yes, I did.
It's funny is that we're not the only ones to have pickle stories with Josh. Like, I've heard other people tell me about Josh and his anti-pickle stories.
We could write a book, actually. the pickle stories of Josh.
There you go.
Stay off of my pickle, would you? All right. So this strategy, quote, Amazon proofing, it is not just though an Amazon proofing of a business model, right? I mean, you're also creating a recession proof model here, relatively recession proof model as well, correct?
Right. That's exactly right. And, you know, as we market our company, we talk about our tenants being both recession resistant and internet sales resistant. And, you know, the big story today really with commercial real estate, especially retail, is the decimation of traditional retail. And you read about it every day, and you know, some of the big names that we've grown up with and have lived with are going away, and they probably should go away because their models are like, I love the story of Sears. 80 years ago, Sears was disruptive because they came out with the first catalog. So it totally disrupted the retail space, right? Now they're dead because they haven't been able to really keep up with, you know, everything that's going on with Amazon and such. So, but yeah, that whole side of the retail business is really suffering right now, but the everyday goods and service shopping centers are thriving, and small business is actually thriving in America right now.
That's cool. Can you walk me through like the typical numbers? I mean, you can do general stuff, but like, what do you buy a shopping center for? What do you have to fix it up? I mean, what does they rent for? I mean, how does it look like?
Cap rates, all that stuff.
Yeah. So, and I'll go in a little bit of where we buy, because we buy in the middle of the country. So we're not buying on the coasts. As you can imagine, buying on the coast is just more expensive and there's more competition. So we see less competition in cities like Omaha and Kansas City and Nashville and Memphis and Indianapolis. And if you go into the numbers, we're buying at about an 8% capitalization rate. So that same property in LA is much more expensive at like a 5% capitalization rate. In Denver, we actually don't own anything in our hometown because it's too expensive here. Yeah. It's probably a 6% capitalization rate. So we're buying, you know, value kind of right off the beginning. We have the same tenant base, but it's in a great city, but pricing is just cheaper. There's less competition. You know, the folks in New York really don't know where Des Moines, Iowa is. I mean, they fly over it all the time and they might look down and see whatever, but you know, they don't really care about Des Moines. We do. We love Des Moines. I mean, it's an awesome community. So 8% capitalization rate, we'll typically use leverage. So we'll get a bank loan for, let's say, 60% of the purchase price. The deal size will be somewhere between $5 and $8 million. It'll be maybe a 75 to 100,000 square foot shopping center. It'll have multiple tenants, so we'll have different businesses in each of our buildings. And that's important because, let's say a Radio Shack goes down. You know, in our portfolio, we had one Radio Shack out of 40 properties at the time, so it didn't make any difference to us. I kind of joke around that what would really hurt us is if people didn't get their haircut anymore, didn't buy booze anymore, didn't buy Subway sandwiches, and didn't work out at a gym. So if all four of those things happen, then we're in trouble.
It's the end of the earth, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so that's not going to happen. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of different things have to happen when you're looking at these neighborhood shopping centers with many tenants, many businesses, basically many income streams coming out of it. You know, the other thing that we look for is that we're in, let's say, class B or C centers and not A centers. The theory being that you can buy a really nice A shopping center, beautiful, brand new, $30 a square foot rents. But like, where do you take it from there? It's an A. So do you go like to A kind of plus, or, and how much value can you add? We like taking a C to a B or a B minus to a B. Our rents are, let's say, $12 a foot, not $30 a foot. So if times get tough, then we might discount the tenant to $11 a foot, as opposed to if you have $30 a foot rents, then you might be discounting to $20 a foot. So it's just a less volatile space, I guess you can say, being in the middle of the country with this type of a tenant base.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's great. We did a show recently. I forget who it was, Brandon, it was Cardone. It was the show with Cardone where we were talking about finding kind of recession proof housing stock. And it was kind of the same thing. It was that class B, you know, $800 to $1,200 a month rent. Seems like a very similar model, except for the retail space. It's great. Brilliant strategy. Have you, I know we have a ton of questions I'm looking at that we've been writing as you've been talking, but what are the downsides that have come from this strategy? You know, what negatives beyond, you know, a Radio Shack going out of business or something else? Are there any things that people would want to look out for?
Yeah, I think that one of the challenges is how do you manage a portfolio like this in different locations, different cities throughout the United States with multiple tenants? So it's a very management intensive business. You really need to have some type of an infrastructure to do that. Now, what's interesting about what's happening in our business today is that most of the shopping centers that we buy are owned by single owners, and they're individuals between the ages of 55 and 70. So they're kind of aging out. And, you know, Joe owned the 100,000 square foot shopping center down the street, and he could do that really well. I mean, it's his baby, you know, provide a great income for his family, all good. But, you know, as he's getting older or she's getting older, kids don't necessarily want to manage that shopping center. So I don't really want to take a swipe at the younger generation, but typically, typically the kids want the money. They really don't want the management headache, right? Yeah. So
like free money, no work, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Where's my check for breathing?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So, you know, as America is aging, right, these shopping centers are owned by individuals one at a time. And that's great, you know, but that population of owners is getting older and they're retiring or they're dying or they're doing whatever. So we see good opportunity for a company that has the infrastructure to be able to manage multiple properties to be able to jump into the space.
What does your infrastructure look like? Like, do you have a big team? How many employees do you have?
We have 60 people that work with us. Wow. And it's been, again, it's management intensive. So property managers and leasing managers and accountants, other parts of the finance part of our business are huge. So building that infrastructure has been really important. And luckily, I have a partner who is a business guy who was able to build that structure. I'm not so much of a business guy. I mean, I graduated with a political science degree. So, you know,
me too. We know nothing.
Hey, we don't know anything. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so I think Brandon has a history degree, which
I minored in poli sci, you know, so it counts. What?
Hey, Brandon, you're frozen.
I don't know why it does that. All right.
Sorry.
Anyway, all right. Back. Right. Anyway, I said I minored in poli sci, so I'm halfway there. So
nice.
That's it.
Nice.
All right. So it's pretty, and it's, again, just property management intensive, our business. And it's just a necessity. So yeah, you have to build that infrastructure.
Okay. So if I was going to dive into this business, where would I start? Obviously you would go and you'd find the first property, and we'll dive into how to find these types of opportunities in a little bit, but I've got my first shopping center, you know, I'm running it by myself, and I want to scale. I want to get up to 50 like you guys have in your organization. Who's the first person you would hire, and how would you start to internally kind of see the development of the organization?
Well, and I'll tell you what we did, which I think makes sense today, is that we hired a really good leasing broker to lease the property for us. So we hired a guy, and again, it's this Chuck E. Cheese property, who knew all the tenants and was able to bring in really good tenants to the property. So seeing how he brought tenants to our property and his experience really helped us to be able to get a sense for really, which is the most important thing, is your revenue or your tenant base, and how do you bring them in? How do you attract them to your property? So we were able to do that through hiring a really good broker. You know, the property management side, we had experience in that prior, and I guess it's a little bit more block and tackling. There's maybe less art to it. My property manager is going to kill me for saying that, but, but you know, kind of getting that revenue side or getting those tenants and getting the right tenant base, the right synergy between the tenants is so important that I would start from there with your first shopping center.
Got it. And let's talk about that for a second too. Synergy between tenants. I buy an apartment building, I get to deal with headaches. You know, if there's walls between units, you're dealing with headaches, right? You got tenants complaining about each other. Do you tend to see that in shopping centers as well? And what is that synergy you're referring to?
Yeah. When we buy a shopping center, we'll go about this process. We just call it weeding the garden. And we'll take a look at the tenant base and say, okay, well, are these tenants synergistic to each other? Will they help each other's businesses grow? So, you know, if you have a liquor store and a hair salon and a Subway and a T-Mobile shop and a health club and an urgent care, if you have that tenant mix, it generates a lot of traffic for your property. It gets tougher, for instance, if you put a church into a big space in a property because there's only people there on Sundays. So it's not generating a lot of activity for the shopping center. You know, we have to look at the parking lot and, okay, we have restaurants that are going to fill the parking lot at night, but during the day, they're not. So the other tenants have the parking lot. So that tenant synergy, having traffic flow, being able to build the tenant base is really important.
I love that. It's funny. Yeah. I know nothing about this business until today. Well, until you and I started chatting about this stuff. And I never even thought about that. I mean, idea of I've been to a lot of strip malls. Is that disrespectful to call it
no.
a strip mall?
Okay. No, God, call it a strip mall all the time. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. That's good.
So I've been to, you know, tons of strip malls, and a lot of them just get it wrong. I mean, like, you know, the parking, you're right. There's like too many restaurants that are in this strip mall, and there's not enough parking. So you're forced to walk a quarter mile, or the synergies just aren't there. So you're not going to buy something where those synergies aren't possible, I'm assuming. And, and you'll buy something where you could change them. If the synergies are busted, you'll get in there and kind of fix it up.
Correct. That's exactly right. Yeah. And with the typical mom and pop owner, you know, again, he or she has done a really good job of creating income for his family or her family, but they may not have been thinking about really optimizing the synergy between the tenant base. And we'll go in there and do that. We have the luxury to be able to do that because of our structure and capitalization and all that type of stuff. So we can do that. But yeah, we're always that's basically how we add value to a property, is to not only change around the tenants a little bit, but at the same time, we're increasing lease rates because tenants are more successful, so they can pay more rent. We just looked at a property today that the prior owner put a Starbucks in with a drive-through on the corner, and it completely changed the complexity of the property. Now, the owner is sick, so they have to sell. So we're going to buy that property kind of halfway through this process and continue to weed the garden, fix it up, add value. But he kind of got it started by putting that Starbucks in. So there are different entry points, let's say, into the real estate.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, I know you have a question before you dive in. I'm curious very specifically about the property you're talking about. What exactly did the Starbucks with the drive-through due to the synergy?
It created a, I was going to use a off color word. It created a lot of traffic flow. Because it's packed all the time. It's literally packed from opening till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the drive through is packed. So you have all those people running around through that center now, parking, looking around, seeing who the other tenants are. So that basically is the shopping center's anchor tenant.
These are good things. I mean,
great things. Oh,
okay,
yeah,
good.
Great, I
thought it was the opposite.
Because the more people that you can attract to the shopping center, that's great. And if there's the parking, right? So there's details you have to deal with, but you know, this place has plenty of parking. It can fit a bunch of people. Bring in that Starbucks, just create a whole new level of traffic for that shopping center.
Got it.
Fascinating.
Awesome.
So would I assume these are all triple net lease tenants? I mean, they all take care of. And can you explain the way that is for people who don't know what triple net lease is?
Yeah, sure. Right. So, triple net lease, the tenant pays a base rate, let's say $10 a square foot. And then they also pay on top of that all of the their share of all of the expenses for a property. So landscaping, taxes, insurance, parking lot maintenance, roof maintenance, all of the tenants share in those expenses. And the beauty of that from a landlord's perspective is that, for instance, if taxes go up, the tenants pay for that increase in taxes. Yeah. If, you know, landscaping costs go up, the tenants pay for that increase. So we can build our financial models off of the base rate, knowing, you know, that that's really, you know, that that's the set rate. And then the expenses are basically taken care of by the tenant. So now we have to administer all that, and we have to be competitive to keep our costs down. But it really inures to the benefit of the landlord to have triple net leases.
That's fascinating. I feel like that's where I want to someday get to, you know, because I feel like that's probably the most, I mean, I've always thought it's most passive, and now you're saying it's a very management intensive business, but that's probably because you have 50 of them. Would that be right in assuming that?
Right. Well, yeah, and there's a real passive way to invest in triple net properties, and that's basically to buy a Walgreens building that has a lease, right? Yep. Because you're buying Walgreens credit, you're going to buy it at a 5 cap, you're going to get a 5% return. They pay all the expenses. They pay the taxes for that matter. So you're going to get your check every month from Walgreens, and that's what you're looking for. So there's an easy way to do that, but that's not our business.
Yeah. And that's fine, you know, and you're getting 5% returns,
right?
Versus your business. So let's talk a tiny bit about the model. I mean, I'm assuming you're doing better than 5% returns on your money here. So how are you getting those returns? I mean, you're buying the lower quality properties, you're fixing them up a little bit, putting better tenants in, raising rents. Is that the basics?
Yeah, that is the basics. So as we're going into a property, we want to make sure that we can generate an 8% return to our investors from the get-go. So that's kind of our starting point. And then through all those things that you mentioned, Josh, we're adding value. So we'll get to a mid-teens type of all-in return as we sell a property, not to the investor. But we've got to add that value. You know, we might sell a pad site, for instance, to a McDonald's in the parking lot, you know. We're going to add tenants. We'll fix the tenant mix, all that type of stuff. We'll fix the property up a little bit, make it more appealing. All of that to basically get more rent.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Yep. Yeah. So you mentioned the 8% return to your investors. Are you syndicating these? Is that how you're putting together the financing on this, or how does the financing work for these?
We have actually a new credit facility, which is kind of interesting. It's very different than what would be a traditional real estate financing facility. It's a portfolio cash flow based financing facility where our lender will lend to us 60% of the cash flow that's coming from a property. So it's basically 60% of the value of the property, but they're looking at cash flow as being the underlying kind of collateral for the property. So we've been building our portfolio under this financing facility. Now it's great about it. And again, you know, it's taken us a while to get here, but it's non-recourse, so there are no individuals on the hook, and it's not secured by the real estate. So it's basically an operating line of credit off of the cash flow from the whole portfolio. So that, you know, that's kind of 20 years down the line, though. We can grab a facility like that. The normal facility is going to be a traditional mortgage, 60, 70% of the value of the building secured by the real estate from a normal bank. So that's the more traditional financing.
Okay. And are you still using for like, I know it's not traditional, like, but do you have a down payment? Is that where you're bringing investors in as part of the down payment part? Okay.
Yeah. And I think another important part of the model, and for that matter, anybody's model, is to just not over leverage your purchase. So, you know, we're using 60% leverage. So, you know, if it's $1 million property, we're getting $600,000 worth of financing. And then we're bringing $400,000 worth of equity to the table. What we saw during the Great Recession is that people leveraged things up to 85, 90, 95%, and they were creamed. I mean, it just doesn't work. So having a reasonable leverage in any real estate deal, to me, makes more sense than over leverage.
Yeah. Brandon, when you were at that conference, the Norris's put on out in California. Yeah. And I think you had said that there was somebody from Washington who had come in and talked about we're at the most leveraged we've ever been, even more so than the Great Recession. Was that right?
Yeah. I can't remember the economist's
name.
Some economist said that we're higher leverage, like residential wise, like people getting first time or, you know, just mortgages, we're at a higher loan to value average than ever in history, including the Great Recession. So like people are really leveraging high right now,
which is hard to believe because, you know, you had all the liar loans and all the no money down stuff,
120% stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. How does it?
I think it's because FHA got so big. I think it must be that, like, FHA is really blown up in the past decade. Yeah. Because before we didn't need FHA. I don't know. That's my guess, but yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, so that makes sense, Dave. You guys, as a means to kind of protect yourself, are not over leveraging. You guys are sitting at that 40% into the deal to kind of protect yourself. That's great. So where are you finding these deals?
So we have a group of four guys out there scurrying around the country, talking to brokers, owners, banks in some cases still, and just trying to track down deals. And we built some systems around that. So, you know, we'll call owners directly. We have very close relationships with the brokerage community in commercial, shopping center space. Brokers control most of the transactions. So, you know, we have really great friends in the brokerage community. And they'll look at a property and they'll say, oh, that's a baseline deal. So they'll show it to us. And we kind of get, again, because we've been at it for a while, to the top of the heap as far as seeing pretty good deals. But it's a lot of networking. You know, I noticed, Josh, coming in, one of the mottos that you have for your firm is to build great relationships, right? Authentic relationships. So that's what we have to do that. You know, we're building authentic relationships with brokers all around the country and owners for that matter. So that's really how we find the properties.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling, did I lock my back door? How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high-quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
So what would you suggest? Again, I'm a newbie. I want to go buy my first shopping center. I love this. This model sounds awesome. What would you tell me to do in order to start building those relationships?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that it's just a different entry point. So just sidetrack a little bit.
Sure.
That there are now through crowdfunding sites and other, and primarily through crowdfunding sites, and even through some of the public non-traded REITs, you know, you can make an investment of a pretty small amount and really learn the business from that sponsor, whether it's crowdfunding site or the public non-traded REIT. If you follow it, you can get a pretty good sense of how these things are run. So that is another decent entry point. And, you know, you're obviously not putting a lot of money in, but I think you can gain a lot of knowledge. And I'm particularly fascinated by some of the crowdfunding sites that have popped up in the last few years because they're doing a good job of educating people. So that's a really good option. I mean, from there, I know you have a lot of listeners that own residential rental real estate. I mean, getting that property management experience is huge. Just knowing how to run a property, and if it's a house or an apartment or whatever, I mean, you're paying bills and collecting rent, and you need to have vendor relationships. So you need to know the landscaper, the HVAC guy, you know, whatever it is. So that basic property management experience, I think, is a great launching pad in owning commercial properties.
Awesome.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
And what about markets? How do you go about, you know, you had talked about looking at properties in the Midwest primarily as opposed to the coasts for pricing. The same thing stands in the residential world. Those tend to be the more reasonably priced markets. But how okay, maybe not how do you pick a market, but how do you know shopping center in neighborhood X is better than shopping center B in neighborhood X? You know, what are the primary factors? Is it foot traffic? Is it street traffic? Or is it really, you know, if you get that one tenant that's going to bring everybody in, then that's really all that matters.
I think that there are several really important details that we'll look at. So does the property have good access? Can you get in and out of it? If you don't have good access, it's, you know, hard for tenants to succeed. Does it have good signage? What's the traffic count on the street or the corner that the property is on? What does the neighborhood look like? And the neighborhood really needs to be dense. The income levels could be anything. There are great neighborhood shopping centers in low income areas. There are great neighborhood shopping centers in middle income areas or in high income areas. So it doesn't really matter the income level because there are tenants to serve that neighborhood. But, you know, we have to just make sure that the kind of these fundamental things are there, because it's amazing. I mean, a property can be a half a block off and have bad access and crappy signage, and it's going to fail. Like it would be one of these properties that you see that are vacant all the time. There's a reason why it's vacant all the time, and the one across the street is not. So the due diligence part of it is, and we haven't really touched on that, but it's absolutely huge, I think, in any type of commercial property or residential for that matter. I mean, really getting to know the fundamentals of how that property works and making sure that, you know, they fit a model. You know, we have our model, that they fit your model, because you have to kind of stick with that. And so, yeah, the fundamental stuff is really important, Josh.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other points of diligence beyond the ones that you covered that you want to highlight?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to look at the physical structure. So you need to know if the roof is failing. So you either budget for it or have the seller replace the roof. Environmental is important. We run across more sophisticated environmental issues, whether it's a gas station with leaky tanks that was on the property 10 years ago, or a dry cleaner that, you know, leak dry cleaning chemicals in the ground. That type of thing is very important. That can really sting you if you don't have proper environmental due diligence. So the physical part of it, as well as the location, and then the financial due diligence on every tenant. So we interview every tenant, and we want to see if they're going to stay or they're going to go. And we take a pretty educated guess on whether or not they are going to stay or they're going to go. It's another challenging part of our business because, you know, some tenants don't speak English, and we're more of an English speaking company at this point. Yeah. So we have to kind of decipher that tenant and what they're saying, whether or not they're lying, whatever it is. You know, one of the things that we see is that tenants very rarely say, "Oh, we are doing so fantastic as we're buying a property," because they know that that's a cue for us to raise rents. Yep. So, right. So they're not going to say, "Oh, we're just hitting it out of the ballpark. This is the best place ever." There's, you know, tenants are smart. They know. So that financial due diligence, that tenant due diligence, the physical, all of that is very important. So that we have a probably 100-point due diligence list that we go through.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you have any, let's say you're looking at a strip mall and you want to buy one, and there's a lot of tenants in there. You want to know the stability of those tenants, I feel like. But yes. You can't go and ask them for their, you know, P&L statements or anything. I mean, like, can you or do you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we do. And sometimes they'll share them. Sometimes they don't. In many cases, the lease will require that the tenant report sales. So, you know, we have metrics behind, okay, you know, what is a good restaurant? 4,000 square foot restaurant should have X amount of sales. So we use those metrics to figure out the health of the tenant. And again, you know, the regional or the national credit type of tenants that you see more often will report sales. The really small mom and pop businesses, I mean, they might be doing their books on a napkin. So you're not going to really get all that accurate of information. But, you know, we'll sit in the parking lot for a day or two and see who's busy, and we'll do, you know, analysis on, you know, kind of gaps in the market and whether or not a tenant is filling a gap. So there's a lot of different things that we've developed to determine whether or not that tenant has some legs to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about evictions? I mean, Is that a problem? Is that an issue, or, you know, rare?
It's probably very different than a typical residential property. I mean, if somebody doesn't pay the rent, we can kick them out. So, now, you know, with that being said, we'll take a look at that business and say, okay, well, it seems like you're struggling. Do you need a little break to get through, you know, the death in your family, or your brother getting ill, or whatever, somebody else coming down the road? We'll give them a break to keep them going. But if they're failing, we can evict them pretty easily.
And is it similar to like a courthouse? You know, you take them to a, you know, like, just like residential, or did you just tell them, hey, give me the keys, you're out?
We just say, hey, give me the keys. And I mean, you could get into some type of litigation, but that rarely happens, because once a tenant's done, they're kind of done. And I mean, you know, the other thing that we found, though, which is that a typical tenant, let's say it's a liquor store and they're on a great corner, the last thing that they're going to do is not pay their rent because they want to stay there. Now, they might, you know, Uncle Joe might get fired for a little bit because the business has a glitch, but Uncle Joe can come back a couple of months later, but they're going to still pay their rent. So, so what we saw during the recession, I mean, our default rate today is 0.02%. So it's amazingly small when you consider our tenant base. So, you know, a fifth of a point, basically, you know, is our default rate. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So we have a pretty solid tenant base. I mean, these people stick around.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Man,
that's
awesome. I've said this before, but like every time we do a podcast about a new topic, I'm always like, I'm totally doing
I'm
this.
Pumped. Yeah, I love this idea.
So,
You got a 1031 coming, but you can't.
I could 1031 into a strip mall. I just don't think I don't think I could find one for what I have to 1031 into. So,
and you've got what, 20 days?
Yeah, left? I got like 25 days left. You know, I got something. I'll figure it out.
Ask Dave. Dave will hook you up with a.
With one of his properties. I'm sure.
With the stuff that he doesn't pick up, the trash.
There you go. So, Dave, where are you headed in the future? I mean, what do you see your business look like in the next 5, 10, and you personally in the next 5, 10, 20 years?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. Well, we have this pretty nice growth trajectory ahead of us. And it's because there were so many individuals that own these shopping centers that are aging. So we're embarking on this aggregation strategy of buying as many of these shopping centers as we can, instituting professional management, and then one day being able to sell maybe the portfolio to a larger institutional buyer or take it public. We have an IPO, basically an IPO exit ahead of us possibly. So, I mean, our 50 properties is great, but we probably have to have around 150 or 200 in order to get to the size to be able to do a public exit or sell to an institution. So we're on that path. As far as me, I'm 55 and been at this for 20 years and love doing it and love raising money, but I've got a great team of 8 other partners. Three of us are a little older. Now we have 6 partners who are in kind of the 40s. So they're our succession and to help us build the business. So I get to fish a little bit more, which is nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, man.
How many hours a week do you work right now? I'm just curious. Like, are you a full-time doing this 40 hours?
Yeah, I'm full-time and I travel a bit. So my part of the company is the capital side. So I'm out raising money and I mean, it's a lot of fun because I get to meet really wealthy people and hear their stories and, you know, sometimes they invest with us and sometimes they don't. So I get to travel around the country and now the world meeting really cool people and seeing if they want to work with us. So that travel and everything is definitely full time, but that's kind of fun because, you know, like I say, I get to see a lot of neat things and meet a lot of really interesting people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Love it.
Cool.
Well, cool. Well, hey, let's shift gears here. We're going to head over to the section of the show, which we call our fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right, yeah, so this is a fire round. These questions come direct out of our very own Bigger Pockets forum. So these are questions that our users are asking for help with. And so we thought you could help. Number one, this guy says, I bought 1 acre of commercial land next to a high school. The high school's got 3,000 students, 500 staff. And I'm planning to build maybe a 10 to 12,000 square foot strip mall with 6 units. What type of businesses do you think will fit well in that kind of a strip mall?
Colorado marijuana and then restaurants.
All right.
So marijuana next to the restaurants.
Yeah.
Right next to the high school. Wendy's, right. Marijuana, right. McDonald's.
McDonald's, more marijuana, Burger King. Right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
That's a pretty good setup there.
There's no white. We need White Castle in there somewhere. We're good. Yeah.
Okay. So I would put restaurants in, and then there are these great retailers still like Plato's Closet that resell jeans to, high school kids. So, yeah, it's just targeting that tenant base to the user that's around you is what's important.
Let me dive in on that. We normally don't dive in on stuff, but I just had a thought here. So let's say you had a strip mall with a vacancy and it was a wealthy demographic, the area where the strip mall is, better area. And that Plato's Closet said they wanted to come in, right? Let's just say somebody that you thought was a mismatch. Would you guys, you guys take that into account? If they're like gunning to go in and be in that strip mall, you're going to say, listen, we just don't think it's a match. Sorry, we can't have you in our mall. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, we would just say no. That's right.
Okay.
It's fascinating because like with residential, right, we have to be very, very careful. And maybe you do with this as well, but like you don't want to violate housing discrimination. So like we have to be very careful on who we reject because it has to be for the right reasons that we're rejecting them, you know? Like I couldn't
say.
Are there
reasons that you can reject people or not other reasons?
Yeah, I mean, I reject people for all.
No. I'm talking about David. Are there reasons that you can't reject people for in this type of space?
No, there are no reasons that you can't reject people, if that's the right to say that. Yeah.
I mean you're not going to reject people for, probably protected classes and all that.
No. But yeah, I mean, it's all economics. So and it's all economics, all about the synergy of the setter. It goes both ways, right? So we have quite a few shopping centers in blue collar neighborhoods. You know, we're not going to put a Williams Sonoma in that shopping center. It's not going to work. So, but we will put a Dollar Tree in. We'll put a Save-A-Lot in. We'll put tenants that fit the demographic of that neighborhood. And those tenants do great. So it just has to do with the fit into the neighborhood.
You're a matchmaker.
We're a matchmaker. Yes, we are.
Yeah, look at you. All fancy and stuff. All right. Next question. What protocol, what's the protocol for charging and collecting overdue rent?
We have, we use the good cop, bad cop philosophy. So our property managers are the good cops and try to get the tenant to pay rent. And then if they don't, we turn them over to our AR department, our accounts receivable department, and they hound them to death until they pay rent or we'll sue them. So we'll take the nice approach for a while, but then we go after them.
Nice.
All right.
Yep. Fair enough.
All right. Next question. Oh, I like this one. It says, hi, BP community. I just acquired my first mixed use building. Sorry, this might be a stupid question. I want to rent the store to franchises, like maybe a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. I'm not sure how to start. Dunkin'. How do I just list the store in the MLS and wait for them to contact me? Should I contact the franchises directly? Or is there a service out there that'll contact them for me?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. So what this person needs to do is to find the broker that represents Starbucks and talk to that broker. Okay. So Starbucks has brokers, Subway has brokers. They all have their own brokers. And so if you take it one step further, you're going to hire a broker that's going to know that broker. So you have to hire a really good broker that knows all of the brokers that represents the tenants. And then, the brokers all know each other, so it's all rigged and they figure out the deal. But you got to hire a broker that knows the broker that has the tenant in tow.
Got it.
All right. That's
answered my next question, which was great. All right. Last question.
By the way, I made brokers mad now. So
I piss a few thousand people off on every show. So it's all good.
You're good.
Let's see. I'll ask this one. One of my partners and I purchased a commercial building earlier this year. My first real estate investment. I was wondering if there's any way to force appreciation by doing the bare minimum. Ultimately, I'm looking to cash out and make some larger to make some ledge repairs, like fixing the roof. It's currently 100% leased. So this guy just, you know, he wants to force appreciation in the quickest and easiest way possible, I guess. So what suggestions might you have for something like that?
I just don't believe in that. Work involved in all this. And I got to tell you, more pre-recession, so pre-2007, you know, you look at somebody's pro forma and they're saying, I'm going to buy it at an 8 cap and I'm going to sell it at a 6 cap and I'm not going to do anything. Well, none of those worked. I mean, it just doesn't work. You have to put some work. I mean, you have to put work into it. You have to add some value by good old fashioned work. You can't rely on the market to force appreciation. I mean,
perfect. I love it. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. Brandon? All right. Well, hey, before we leave you, we're going to head over to the last segment of the show, which we lovingly refer to as our
Famous Four.
All right, let's get to the Famous Four. These are the same four questions we ask every guest every week. Number one, what is your favorite real estate book, like a real estate investing book? Do you have one?
That's a good question. I don't think I've actually read a real estate investment book.
Wow. All right.
Oh. Perfect.
I'm a little offended you haven't read my book, Dave. Come on.
It's David, Brandon.
David. Yeah. I'm offended that you, okay, I'll get you a copy. I'll get Josh to give you a copy before you leave.
Yeah. All right. How about favorite business book, non-real estate? David doesn't read books. All right. Next question. Jesus, man. Come on.
I kind of rely on the people around me. I've read business books, you know, Good to Great, all that type of stuff. Yeah. But I can't really think of one that really has hit me as being revolutionary.
Fair enough. Right.
That works. All right, man. What do you do for fun? Our kids are friends. I know you got a great family. What do you guys like to do when you're not doing the real estate thing?
Well, since I live in Colorado, it's being outdoors. So in the winter, it's skiing. In the summer, it's fishing and hiking and biking and just being outdoors. And I just, you know, love living here and love the fact that we have such easy access to the most, you know, beautiful parts of our country. So try to take advantage of it as much as I can.
At 55, you could still hike. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I did, Josh, as you know, I broke my Achilles tendon last year and that kind of stopped me for a year, but I'm going to be back this year.
See, it's always, I kid, but it's great because the show we recorded this morning was with a 24-year-old who was making jokes like I was around with the dinosaurs. So, you know, when I get to be one of the younger people, you know, it makes me feel good about myself. So, yeah.
Wow. All right. Last question from me, David, what do you think sets apart successful real estate investors from all of those who, you know, they talk about it, but they give up, they fail, or they just never take action. They never get started.
I think you have to take risk. So if you're not willing to take some risk, you can't be successful. We took some risk at the beginning going from a property management company, kind of serving other people to actually being an investor. So you got to take that risk and then it's calculated, do it smart. But I just don't see how you get anywhere in the business if you're not willing to push it a little bit and take some risk and go on the edge and do it thoughtfully, but put yourself out there.
Awesome. Yeah, really. All right, man. Well, before we let you go, where can people find out more about you? How can they learn about your company and how can they reach out if they want to?
Yeah, sure. So we have a website and it's baselineinvestments.com. It's spelled BACELINE investments.com. And that's pretty much the best way to see what we're doing and what we're all about.
Awesome. Cool. Well, listen, thanks so much for coming on the show. Yep. Lots of luck going forward. I'm looking forward to watching you guys IPO in the next, you know, 10 years.
That's great.
It'd be awesome.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Dave.
Thank you.
All right, Dave. Yep, thanks. All right, guys, that was David Pucci. Big thanks to David for coming on the show. Shiny object, huh, Brandon?
Oh my gosh, I am totally going to buy strip malls. Like, this is like my new thing. I'm going to do
it. This is it. Triple net, strip mall.
Oh man.
Go make moves. Yeah, but you're in the West Coast, so you're going to have to go find something in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, but you're in Denver, so you got to do it too, you know? That's okay. Yeah, I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Minnesota.
Well, you know that, and you like live in Podunk, so I'm guessing you could probably actually find some
I could, but man, like
strip on your area.
I probably could, but that they actually freak me out in my area. Like commercial properties in small rural towns freak me out because like when there's a vacancy, it's not for like a month or 6 months. It's like 6 years. Like that freaks me out.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And that's what he had talked about. Yeah. High traffic areas that have lots of, I mean, what's the word he used? Not velocity, but,
I don't know, but I know what you're talking about.
I'm blanking out. But yeah, I mean, you know, that location matters. Location matters. Jeez, yeah, 2, 3, 5, 5, 3. I can't get it right. Yeah, man. So this is it, right? You're gonna go from mobile home parks to strip malls.
I want to sample a shopping lot of centers. Different things.
Neighborhood shopping centers.
I want to sample a lot of stuff, but first I gotta buy my mobile home park. Is that a goal at the beginning of the year?
How much time do you have left on your 1031?
I don't know. It's like 30 some days.
Yeah, you're fine.
Interesting enough, I'm actually looking at a property in the good old state of Michigan right now that I'm most excited about. So we'll see. I don't know.
Detroit.
Not in Detroit. Other part of the state. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
I'll keep you updated if I get it.
They're pushing hard on this Amazon business. I don't know if you saw. There's like all these cities that are trying to get Amazon's new massive, I don't know if it's a headquarters or they said they're going to create like thousands and thousands of jobs wherever they relocate or locate this new facility. During the NFL, apparently there was on the headsets of some of the coaches, you could see like this Amazon Detroit, I think it was hashtag or something like that, which is crazy. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know Denver's pushing hardcore for it. I mean, lots of these cities that kind of fit the criteria they're searching for are vying. Yeah. You never know, man. They could definitely turn around an economy.
That is true. Well,
so yeah, cool. Man. Awesome. We'll get out there, go find a strip mall, make moves. And thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. I thought it was great. Thought it was a lot of fun. And you know, we got more coming at you next week and beyond. So thanks for listening. I'm Josh Dorkin.
You're not going to let me take it out this time? I've been asking for years.
Go ahead. You know what? All right. Start up. Go ahead.
I was just kidding. I don't want to do it now. Now I don't want charity. You take it. I ain't taking your charity.
I have nothing to say at this point.
For the Bigger Pockets podcast, my name is Josh Dorkin. Signing off.
Well played. Well done.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
It's time for the Random Six. All right, now before we get out of here, let's get to today's Random Six.
There's not a thing.
There's not a thing. Oh, we do have a thing, but anyway. Well, whatever. We're going to do it. All right, so these are just random questions just to get to know you a little better, completely non-real estate related. So number one, name three things in nature, or we'll say at least one or two. Let's say three. Three things in nature you find most beautiful. Like what's just most awe-inspiring for you in nature?
A river is number one. Wild animals are number two, and trees are number three.
All right. I like it.
There you go. But now are you talking Colorado trees or real trees?
Real trees.
Got it.
What's a Colorado tree? Is that?
Oh, I know. It's the same old, you know, they turn one color, blah, blah, blah. Real trees turn like 10 different colors.
I was referring to the marijuana, but that's fine.
That kind of tree.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about in Washington there, Brandon.
I know what you're talking about. No, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. Yes.
All right, David.
I didn't like the inflection you had there in your voice.
if you had one day left on Earth, how would you like to spend it?
On a river.
All right.
Like floating down it?
I would be in Patagonia fly fishing.
All right.
Cool.
Sounds relaxing.
All right. What was the last thing you ate?
Is this a random six question?
It is a random six question.
Curious.
Yeah.
It's less than you eat. It was a Subway sandwich on the way over here.
All right. Nice. Recession-proof business.
Yeah.
There you go.
What movie could you just watch over and over and over again?
The current movie that I do watch over and over again is Deadpool.
Oh, okay. I love that movie. It's so funny.
That's a good movie. All right, so yeah, my
wife hates it, by the way. I can't believe you're watching that movie again. I'm like, I love this movie.
So offensive.
It's so offensive.
All right. My last of the random six. Josh has one more, but what size bed do you sleep in?
Where are you coming up with these
things? I typed into Google random questions and I found this.
It's a queen size bed.
All right. You're one of them.
Yes, one of them.
Oh, man. All right. I like this question. We ask this every once in a while, but I ask this on every job interview. But if you could sit down and live the life of any historic figure, alive or dead, whose life would you want to live, and what day in particular would you want to experience from them?
Oh boy, that's a good one. I would probably want to live Harry Carey's life, and would have wanted to experience him at a World Series game.
Hey! The Cubs win! The Cubs win! Mr. Harry Carey.
Oh, good job.
That's it.
Good job.
Love Harry Carey.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah. Obviously, you're a Cubs fan.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, David.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks, it was super fun. Yep. Thanks, guys.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, FOUR, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.